Let's talk about setting the stage for success, Bill. And I want to start this off by identifying what are the components of effective communication. And there was seminal research done at UCLA by a professor named Albert Mehrabian, who identified the three components which comprise effective communication. And of course, he wasn't given a grant to do that, because that's pretty obvious when you think about it. Those three components are the visual, vocal, and verbal components. But what he did was he actually did research to identify the percentage that each of these contributed to effective communication. And first, let's just confirm our definitions here. The visual component is what is often referred to as body language. It's the motion and expression of the face and body. The vocal component is the tone, the resonance, and the projection of the words that you've chosen. And the verbal is the actual words spoken. And what his research found was that the percentage that each contributes to effective communication is as follows. The visual component is 55%, more than half. The vocal component was 38%, and the words or the verbal component was just 7%. And what this points out and illustrates really clearly is that when you're on the telephone, you're really left with less than half of what comprises effective communication. And we call this the visual gap. So one of the keys, big keys to effective communication on the telephone, is to minimize or eliminate this visual gap. It's also important to understand that this is a two-way street. The caller can't see you, and you can't see the caller either, which means that a lot of cues that we use in normal face-to-face communication to understand if we're being understood, believed, liked, accepted, etc., are not part of the equation. So we really want to work on minimizing that visual gap. Another very important distinction to make is this concept I call the self-fulfilling prophecy trap. Essentially, the self-fulfilling prophecy trap holds that when we label something as undesirable, the quality of our communication changes, and almost always it changes for the worse. And this often occurs when somebody calls and asks, how much does something cost? It's also reinforced and becomes actual office policy in a situation, for instance, where there's a telephone tracking sheet, and one of the options to check off is price shopper. In that situation, the call handler understandably feels that he or she is doing the practice a service by, quote, getting rid of the price shopper, end quote. But as Bill has mentioned, there's never been a study to suggest that the value of a patient has any bearing on its source. So this really is circular logic. We make people low quality by treating them low quality.
And I think this thing about price shoppers, I mean, I'd like to say it makes my hair stand up. I don't have any hair anymore, so I can't say that. But I'd like to say that it makes my hair stand up on the back of my neck when people say price shopper, because I'm a price shopper. I am a price shopper. I go in all the time, and if I don't know the price of something, I ask. Now, something I've learned about shoppers is that only people who are interested are concerned about the price. And I think one of the big mistakes that dental offices make is somebody is interested in price, and we immediately say they're looking for the lowest price, which is not true.
Right. We have a battle on our hands.
It's this person is going to be an adversarial position, and we're, of course, more expensive than they want, and so that's not good. Well, the truth is, there are many times, and I'm going to just challenge everyone listening to this and participating in this work, is that many times when you're pricing something, you do not want the cheapest. We all know that. Well, it's very often that this person on the phone is simply asking that question because they don't know what else to ask. And maybe they got a quote from someone that seems so low that they really don't believe they can get quality work for that.
That's right, Bill. It's a question that they're hanging their hat on because they don't know what else to ask. They might be asking you, how much does a crown cost? But I would submit to you to consider what I think is the truth, which is, what they're thinking and feeling is, can I trust you? Will you offer me value? And maybe even, will you treat me better than my last dentist treated me?
So one of the things I'd like to do is, when that question comes up, is how do we handle it? Because it does come up all the time.
Sure.
And yet what I find is the typical reaction to it is defense. Get this person off the phone. They're just price shopping.
So, you know, Bill, another important thing to realize is that Are you going to get 100% of the patients to commit to a firm appointment? Probably not, although I will tell you that I know some people that are I classify as master telephone communicators, and I am confident saying that they close almost 100% of people that are calling, that are responding to some sort of an offer to call.
Yeah, I think 95% is probably a reasonable goal. I mean, you're giving an offer, for example, a complimentary consultation on x-rays. If you can't get 95% of those people, they have gone to the trouble to call you, so it's not free. They have done some effort. They're looking to make that appointment when they make it. And all you've got to do is get out of their way. And if you can't get 95%, there's something wrong.
Right.
You know, I think this leads into something that happens a lot in business. I think it happens a lot in life, is that people create policies on the exception. Now, if you'll take a look in any dental practice, and I've looked in thousands of them, most of the policies that are created are for that bottom 20% of the patients. It has to do with how we treat them, and this is how we do it here. We were talking about this yesterday, for example, having answering machines that don't take cancellations. Well, an answering machine, for example, can be a convenience to the patient, but by gosh, we're not going to take it because somebody canceled their appointment one time. Or we have financial policies set up for that bottom 20%. And I think if we actually base our policies on the rule rather than the exception, we're going to move further down the road on this.
That's absolutely right.
And so
right.
Take a look at every policy in your office, but especially your telephone policies. Who are they made for? The top 20% or the bottom 20%?
Right. I mean, being human beings, we're all pain avoiders. We don't like to deal with conflict or confrontation or rejection, but we really do ourselves and our practice a disservice in this context, for instance, and you say, well, that call didn't go very well, so I'm going to try to avoid answering the phone, or if somebody asks me what the price is, rather than go through the skills I'm about to learn, I'm just going to say we don't quote prices over the phone, or you have to come in, or some other easy way to get off the phone and avoid the challenge.
Okay, now you mentioned a concept here about the tallest tent pole. Now you just spent a week in a tent out in the Morocco running across the desert. What does this refer to?
Well, in this context, it's just as most of you know, if you've ever seen a tent, the pole is used to create the tent. And the material, the canvas that's directly above the tip of that tent pole is higher than any other part of the tent. But the material around the tent pole is also quite a bit higher than it was before the tent pole was placed. And the analogy here is shared because by becoming master telephone communicators, all your communication will improve greatly. Because this is probably the proving ground or the most challenging aspect of communication. Once you get this down, everything else is easy, and you'll be amazed and pleased at how better your communication across the board is.
So this might even help you at home. This could help you with your spouse, with your children, your friends.
That's exactly right, because it'll teach you to slow down, to listen, to identify opportunities, to convert them into needs, and to support the person so that they're comfortable making a decision, which is the decision that you feel is in their best interest anyway.
This may be an excellent time to stop the recording, open the workbook, and actually write some scripts. My top offices write scripts for every situation that comes up. There are only certain situations that come up, and they repeat themselves time and time again. And if you have written a script, you'll know how to respond. So write the script, practice it, print it, laminate it, and put it over each phone. That way, anyone who answers the phone will know what to say.
Workspace can be found on pages 18, 19, and 20 of your workbook. Or if you prefer, just use a separate sheet of paper.